Ahoy, ahoy. I'm here. I'm trying to get this to work. It's acting up.
It's 1900 UTC. And that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Ahoy! Welcome, welcome, one and all. It is 1901 UTC on September the 4th, 2023, and it's Labor Day here in the United States. So hello, hello. Happy Labor Day. Solidarity to you and all the workers out there who are stuck working. Shout out to X1 who just joined. Let's see what's going on in comm real quick. Yeah, we got Ratsu and UserFXNet along with Jeff who got himself a new violin bow. Congratulations. Connor H and BiteMe8827 in the house. Welcome, one and all. There's a lot of news and stuff to cover, but I want to be sure and remind you that it's Monday, which means that there's quite a bit of shows for you to listen to. At 1900, that's me, news to me, followed by Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, show that airs every day at 1930 UTC. Then we have Organized Chaos at 2200 hours. Oh, don't want to forget Mix Remix with Harry Larry. This is a show that airs every Monday at 20 hours. And then Harry Larry has a show called Something Blue that happens on Fridays at 20 hours. So don't want to miss either of those. But whichever way, I think Harry Larry is usually live and calm during Something Blue, but not always for Mix Remix. So take roll your dice. Stoke Sauce is at 00 hours tonight. Along with We Are Free Flow with Nozomi and Masowo at 0100, and then Audio Theater at 0600. If you have trouble going to sleep, like I do sometimes, that's a fun show to tune into. Hey, and Ratsu's in the house. Hello, hello. All right, so let's get into it. There's some death and destruction. There's plenty of news to use. It's not as down, a big downer as it usually is, though, which isn't bad, I guess, because it's a holiday. At least three people have died after heavy rains lashed Spain, triggering flash floods that forced the closure of Madrid metro lines and high-speed rail links. Helicopters were sent to rescue people who had sought refuge on the roofs of their homes in the central city of Toledo, about 50 kilometers southwest of Madrid on Monday. This is in Spain. I didn't know that Toledo... There's this town in Ohio called Toledo, and whenever people say Holy Toledo, I always think they're talking about Toledo, Ohio, but maybe they're talking about Toledo, Spain. Either way, the weather agency registered a record rainfall of 90 liters per square meter on Sunday. Spanish media said a man was found dead by police during a rescue attempt on the road near Bargas, while another man died as rescuers tried to reach him in the town of Casarubios del Monte. The third person who died was a 50-year-old man who had been reported missing. His body was found on Monday afternoon, floating in a river near his home. According to the weather agency, the weekend storm affected almost the whole country, with the heaviest rains recorded on Sunday in the coastal province of Cadiz, Tarragona, and Castello. The sudden downpours on Sunday and Monday transformed streets into rivers of mud that swept away cars and rubbish bins. Hail was also reported in many areas. So, yeah, a bit of heavy rain causing tremendous damage and some death there. Now, there's also emotional damage that can kill. On June 5th, Li Min So described in her diary the fear that overtook her body as she entered her classroom to teach. My chest feels too tight. I feel like I'm going to fall somewhere. I don't even know where I am. On July 3rd, the primary school teacher wrote that she'd become so overwhelmed by the craziness of work, she wanted to let go. 2 weeks later, the 23-year-old was found dead in her classroom store cupboard, by her colleagues. She had taken her own life. This tragedy has unleashed a wave of anger from primary school teachers across South Korea. Tens of thousands of them went on strike on Monday to demand better protections at work. They say they're frequently harassed by overbearing parents who call them all hours of the day and on weekends, incessantly and unfairly complaining. Minseo's cousin, Park Doo-young, struggles not to cry as he straightens out her small, empty apartment, now home to just her goldfish. Her bed is unmade, and beside it sits a pile of drawings from her first-grade students, telling her how much they loved her. Underneath is a stack of library books on how to cope with depression. Really sad kind of scene painted there. Park says his cousin had been teaching for a little over a year, fulfilling her childhood dream by following her mother into the profession. She'd adored the kids, she said. So in the dark days after his cousin's death, which police quickly pinned on a recent breakup, Park assumed the role of detective. He unearthed hundreds of diary entries, work logs, and text messages. They revealed that in the months leading up to her suicide, Minseo had been bombarded by complaints from parents. Mostly one of her pupils had slashed another child's head with a pencil, and she'd been embroiled in heated late phone calls and messages with the parents. For the past 6 weeks, tens of thousands of teachers have rallied in Seoul, claiming they're now so scared of being called child abusers, they're unable to discipline their students or intervene as they attack each other. They accuse parents of exploiting a child welfare law passed in 2014, which dictates that teachers who are accused of child abuse are automatically suspended. Teachers can be reported for child abuse for restraining a violent child, while a telling off is frequently labeled as emotional abuse. One teacher received a complaint after denying a parent's request to wake their child up with a phone call each morning. Another was reported for emotional abuse after taking reward stickers off a boy who had cut his classmate with scissors. At least one protest, 28-year-old teacher Kim Jin-seo said that she had experienced suicidal thoughts and needed 3 months off work, following two particularly aggressive complaints. In one case, she had asked a disrupted pupil to take 5 minutes to gather their thoughts in the toilet, while in the other, she had reported a child to his parents for fighting. In both instances, the school forced her to apologize. So, not looking so great there. Pretty ugly stuff going on there, so that's kind of a bummer. But, yeah. Words can hurt, especially if you use them over and over. So, let's talk about something that I don't know if it's just rich people do it or who this is for. I know of two people that go to this event. One guy, he just makes a lot of money, and so I know why he goes. And the other person, I don't know if maybe they'd have money or they used to have money, but they take a RV every year. But Burning Man is what we're talking about. Burning Man used to be Burning Man used to be an event that happened every year in the U.S. where a bunch of burnouts, like people who take too many drugs, and so they're all kind of crusty. Like, they can take a bunch of drugs and nothing really messes with them, right? Because they're all burned out. So, because of that, that was my impression of Burning Man all this time. Well, recently it got cleaned up. Or it's become more acceptable, and it's something that people are going to as a thing. And, well, a man has died there. The man's death is said not to be related to the unprecedented 2 to 3 months' worth of rainfall that fell over the weekend. Burning Man organizers gave an update saying that the death of the unnamed man was unrelated to the weather. Emergency services had responded to a call about the 40-year-old man found on the playa on Friday, but could not resuscitate him. His identity has not been released, but the next of kin have been notified. Further details have yet to be provided. The death of the man came as heavy rains hammered the festival, creating thick mud that trapped thousands of campers and vehicles. Black Rock Desert in Nevada, where the festival was held, experienced around 2 to 3 months' worth of rain, which is up to 0.8 inches in just 24 hours between Friday and Saturday morning. The large downpour turned the arid desert floor into a thick mud, making it difficult for festival goers to maneuver through. A little over 70,000 people are still stuck on the festival site, according to the people there. Let's see what we got. Here, and I've got a photo that I can share because I'm on my computer. All right, and that's at sdf.org/L/17T. That's sdf.org/Lima/17Tango. And that's all lowercase, sdf.org/L/17T. X1 commenting, teachers need tasers to improve their customer's experience. And Lakota Jones making a joke about the company that owns the taser company. Adult violence on kids was no big deal back then. So it's kind of child abuse law being exploited to impress on teachers. It's kind of sad, yeah. Burning Man. The only reason I mentioned it was because of the death. So in the Ukraine, they've appointed a new minister of defense, or defense minister. Minister of defense was, who was that? Jerry Rice? I should know this off the top of my head. I've got his jersey. Reggie White. Reggie White was the minister of defense. He was a pro football player, USA American football player. And he played for the Green Bay Packers for a while. He was a big guy. Anyway, the Minister of Defense here in this case is a guy named Rustam Umerov. So what do we got? Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky decision to replace his defense chief is seen primarily as an attempt to clean up corruption. But the appointment of Rustam Umerov, a Crimean Tatar and a Muslim, is a signal that the Ukraine is serious about returning Crimea, which Russia annexed from Ukraine in 2014. Speculations about the replacement, who has been the defense minister since November 2021, has been rife for months. While personally not accused of any wrongdoing, the man by President Zelensky's side since day one of the invasion was seen as unable to stop corruption penetrating his ministry. Military procurement scandals and accusations of bribery against officials at enlistment centers made him damaged goods in the eyes of Ukrainian society. So this is be interesting to see how this plays out. One of the things that I don't think gets studied enough or talked about enough is, when the U.S. shows up to a small country and gets the world to give them billions and billions and billions of dollars and all sorts of weaponry that they could never have dreamed of afforded on their own. You get a lot of grifters. There's a lot of shady people that show up in that kind of scene, in that kind of space. I mean, if they're not careful, it'll be kind of like those mineral-rich states in Africa that are just in a state of constant turmoil. Anyway, so that's what's going on there. They've switched the one. We'll see what happens. The G20 summit is coming up. That's the it's basically the New World Order kind of thing people get freaked out about. U.S. President Joe Biden has said he's disappointed that his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping, plans to skip the upcoming G20 summit in India. So we'll see. X1 pointing out, corruption could easily damage your brand name. As long as the Ministry of War can do its job, everybody will be happy, I'm sure. Just last week, India protested after Beijing released a map that claims the state of Arunachal Pradesh and Aksai Chin Plateau as Chinese territory. Mr. Xi and Mr. Biden may still have an opportunity to speak in November at a meeting among leaders of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation in San Francisco. About 2 months after the two leaders met in the Indonesian island of Bali last November, a Chinese spy balloon floated over the U.S., which delayed efforts to kickstart the dialogue. Yeah, we kind of all remember that. So we'll see. G20 and BRICS are kind of at odds with each other. And BRICS is kind of funny because it's can be viewed as an opposition or an economic group that would be opposed to like the G20, but then it's also kind of, it could easily become a defensive group, and then we'd be talking NATO type stuff. So we'll see. In Minnesota is the state in the United States. It's where George Floyd was murdered by the police, and there were lots of protests. Well, a prison in the U.S. state of Minnesota was placed in a lockdown on Sunday after dozens of inmates refused to return to their cells. The protest, staged by around 100 prisoners, was later resolved without incident. Inmates were unhappy at being kept in their cells due to understaffing over Labor Day weekend, the state's Department of Corrections said. All inmates had now returned to their cells. Extra police units, firefighters, and other emergency teams were stationed outside in Baywater, about 25 miles or 40 kilometers east of Minneapolis. Advocates for the inmates said the incident was a protest over prison conditions, including the excessive heat, limited access to showers and ice, and unclean drinking water. The U.S. National Weather Service heat advisory is in place until Tuesday for the area, warning that temperatures could reach up to 37.7 degrees C, which is 100 degrees Fahrenheit. One of the things that is one of the more appalling things about the United States is once you're incarcerated, the suspension of slavery doesn't apply to you. So you can be bought and sold and used as a slave once you're incarcerated, at least in the U.S. In addition to that, you don't have very many human rights, or you pretty much don't have any rights, even human rights. So like, if they want to torture you or put you in, you know, beat you or whatever they want to do, they pretty much can do. So one of the fun things is that in places where it gets really hot, they don't have air conditioning because politicians don't want to pay for air conditioning inmates. They don't want to appear weak on crime by giving inmates air conditioning, but then they just literally cook to death in their cells whenever it's 110 degrees outside. And same thing about heat. They don't want to have heat in the prisons if they're in a place where it gets cold. So anyway, totally sucks. But they say it was resolved without incident. So we'll see. Somebody will write a memoir or something. We'll find out. Oh, is that the Tory outlook? I now have a way to relate it. Oh, excuse me. I'm going to take a drink. All right. Oh, it's 1917 UTC. That means... What did I need to tell you? Oh.
Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. You're listening to Anon Radio powered by SDF. And SDF, well, that's powered by you. So thank you for being here and hanging out, listening to the news. Hopefully you're sticking around for at 1930 UTC. Right here on Anon Radio, we've got the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. It's a fun show that airs every goddamn day. And depending on how our little Tobester's feeling, we may go off into the woods, or we may go looking at marmots. We could find owls or fungi. Might just find golf balls. Could find a bicolor golf ball. Anything is possible on Anon Radio and with the Dubious Goals Committee. So stick around for that, and then the mix remix after that. All right. So let's keep it rolling. Here it is. This is in the United States. And it happened in Austin. So it was news to me because this is where I live. A high-end hotel in the liberal Texas enclave of Austin is playing host to a conference whose theme is boosting global health birth rates. I might have to protest this. I don't know when this is happening. Whose theme is boosting global birth rates, but which will in fact feature racist and eugenicist internet personalities and far-right media figures. The Natal Conference, whose website warns that by the end of the century, nearly every country on Earth will have a shrinking population and economic systems dependent on reliable growth will collapse. And it's scheduled to be held on December 1st at the Line Hotel. Oh, cool, I got time. December 1st. Natal's website claimed that the conference has no political or ideological goal other than a world in which our children can have grandchildren. But The Guardian can reveal its organizer, Kevin Dolan, has been promoting the event on the far-right podcast circuit and has explicitly linked the conference's pro-natalist orientation to eugenics. Dolan was at one time a social media influencer connected to the far-right Mormon Deseret Nationalist subculture and has himself linked the conference's themes with eugenics in interviews. On June 13th, Dolan was a guest on the Jolly Heretic podcast, hosted by Edward Dutton, an Englishman, who left an academic position in Finland after his university found that a work he co-authored with the self-described scientific racist Richard Lynn plagiarized a student's dissertation. Dutton once served as editor of the eugenicist journal Mankind Quarterly and is listed as a natal speaker. In his conversation with Dutton, Dolan said, "I think that the pronatalist and the eugenic positions are very much not in opposition. They're very much aligned. Broadly, eugenics is a group of beliefs and practices aimed at improving the genetic quality of human population. It became a basis of a popular movement from the late 19th century and led to governments around the world adopting policies such as forced sterilization of disabled and mentally ill people. The field was discredited after the Second World War due to its association with racial policies in Nazi Germany, and many critics have called it a pseudoscience." Let's see, this is a touching something. Hey, SQW, welcome, welcome. Tories, when they do get imprisoned, write books and make more money. Ah, good point, Ratsu. Books, art, culture, knowledge, there's worse. Yeah, and Mormon, I think it was just, they were saying that he was part of a subsect of the Mormon faith that believed in eugenics. And eugenics, the United States was doing eugenics so well that the Nazis came over here to learn from us. So, yeah, it's pretty terrible. VIP price tickets are priced at $1,000 and one-day tickets at $500. And The Guardian contacted The Line, one of a four-city chain of fashionable boutique hotels, about it hosting the conference, but didn't receive an immediate response. The Guardian emailed Kevin Dolan to ask him about the conference, but received no response. So nobody is going to answer, but yeah. The peerage is eugenics. So, yeah, we'll see what happens here. Sorry I went off about that, but it's local, so I wanted to mention it here. Hey, Oak 3, welcome, welcome. So let's keep it rolling. Far-right militants in Greece have illegally arrested migrants they blame for fires. Two videos posted on August 23rd show Greek members of the extreme right illegally, quote, arresting. So I'm guessing these people aren't law enforcement. They just showed up and kidnapped some guys. Illegally arresting migrants in Evros, a Greek region bordering Turkey. The footage shows the militants forcing one group of men to sit in the dirt. Another group of terrified migrants were crammed into a trailer. While members of the far right have carried out this type of illegal arrests of migrants before, it's rare to have footage of it. The attackers accuse the migrants of being responsible for the widespread fires in the region. The militiamen feel empowered by the political context hostile to immigrants, according to Observers, the part of France 24. Let's see. Hey, welcome, Lycaina. Welcome, welcome. These guys showed up and harassed and kidnapped these guys. Where did they take them? Let's see. Okay, nope. All right. These men apparently arrested 13 migrant men, not 25 as they'd claimed on the video. The victims told journalists that the militants had beaten them with metal rods. They took off all our clothes and filmed us. We stared there a long time, sweating and unable to breathe. The militia members arrest migrants, but because they can't deport them, they hand them over to police. There we go. That's where they go. So, just a sad, sad bit of news there. What else is going on? Well, a lot of stuff, duh. Oh, how about this? A woman who suffered chronic pain for 18 months after getting a cesarean section was found to have a surgical instrument the size of a dinner plate inside her abdomen. The Alexis Retractor, or AWR, was left inside the New Zealand mother after her baby was delivered at an Auckland City hospital in 2020. That's right. back to sad news. Following initial investigations into the case, Te Watu Ora Auckland, formerly Auckland District Health Board, claimed it had not failed to exercise reasonable skill and care towards the patient. But on Monday, New Zealand's Health and Disability Commissioner found that they were in breach of the Code of Patient Rights. there is substantial precedence to infer that when a foreign object is left inside a patient during an operation, the care fell below the appropriate standard, says McDowell's report. It is a never event. The report details that the woman underwent a scheduled C-section because of concerns about placental previa. An Alexis wound retractor, a device used to draw back the edges of wounds during surgery, was left in her abdomen. That resulted in the woman suffering chronic abdominal pain until the device was discovered, incidentally, on an abdominal CT scan. The extra-large AWR, about the size of a dinner plate, and designed to retract incisions up to 17 centimeters in diameter, was not detectable by X-ray. And wouldn't you know it, we have an image of the device. This is not gruesome at all. This is just an image of the device. Dinner plate? You can see it at sdf.org/L/17U. It's sdf.org/Lima/17Uncle or uniform. So sdf.org/L/17U. And I'm sure you can find other images there, but since it doesn't show up on an X-ray, since it's made of plastic, that makes it even harder to fight. But yeah, Oak 3, you're right. Deny. This was eventually removed from the woman's abdomen in 2021, approximately 18 months after the initial procedure, and a number of visits to her GP. On one occasion, her pain was so severe she visited the emergency department. During the operation in 2020, a surgeon, a senior registrar, an instrument nurse, three circulating nurses, two anesthesiologists, two anesthetic technicians, and a theater midwife were all in the theater. A count of all surgical instruments used in the procedure did not include the AWR, possibly due to the fact that the Alexis retractor doesn't go into the wound completely, as half of the retractor needs to remain outside the patient, so it would not be at risk of being retained. Hey, SQW, welcome. I feel like there's a plate stuck in my abdomen. Oh, nah, that's not possible. Here, go take some Motrin. Pretty terrible for ethical and privacy reasons. We can't comment on the details of individual patient care. However, we have reviewed the patient's care, and this has resulted in improvements to our system, which is the typical oops, we fucked up kind of hospital response. We've got about 2 minutes to go before the Dubious Goals Committee. I did want to mention some cool stuff. An archaeological team has uncovered a complete Neolithic cursus on the Isle of Arran. So the Isle of Arran is southwest coast, overlooked by, just tell me where it is, Scotland, and cursus, and it is the only complete Neolithic cursus monument found in Britain. The Arran, or cursus, approximately 1.1 kilometer in length, sits close to the stone circles of Machri Pumor, which was clearly a significant ceremonial site. So, pretty cool. I'll include a link to the map, but we're out of time, so please enjoy the Dubious Goals Committee. Bow, bow. Dubious. We're getting dubious.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow, and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Dubious Goals Time. Shout out to Tobe and Kant.